Karen Lyle of Salesport Talk, and it's time for A Cup of Cane with Scotch. I'm talking with Christopher Cain. Christopher, what about the SailGP app changes the race for the fans?
That technology was originally developed when the America's Cup was here in San Francisco, and a guy named Stan Honey did a lot. It won an Emmy because he actually developed a technology for the first down marker in football, which was the first time anyone ever took a technology overlay and put it into a live broadcast. Pretty breakthrough piece of technology when it happened at the time. And the problem with sailing in general, and this was this discussion before the America's Cup came to San Francisco, and they knew there was going to be lots of people watching it. They knew there was going to be lots of people on the shore. And the problem with sailboat races is it's very hard to figure out the things that fans want to know. Who's going how fast? Who's in first place? Who's closest to the finish line? Since sailboats have a tendency to not sail directly at the thing they are sailing towards, it tends to make it very hard for average people to figure it out. So that was part of that whole technology they developed for the America's Cup, and then they embellished it even more for SailGP. And I think that's, again, you know, looking at SailGP as starting to merge the next generation of sports engagement with traditional sports. You know, people like my son, when they're watching esports, they're into the data as much as they are into the actual sport itself. And I think sailing is unique in that not only can the data be very exciting, the data is very telling. You know, football and baseball, it's more static in terms of, you know, the batting average you had at the beginning of the game. Even if you get four hits, the batting average is not going to change that much. One of the things that I find fascinating about competitive sailing is sailing is the only sport in the world where the playing field is constantly changing underneath you. When you go up the waterfront to turn around at Black Aller, which is the turning mark just west of St. Francis Yacht Club, and then you go down, and the next time you come up that leg, the wind's going to change. The tide has changed. Where the other boats are in relationship to you has changed. It's never the same leg. It's never the same course. And because of that, the data is so much more interesting if you can be presented that data in a way that is understanding that, oh my God, they did this tack. They went in an opposite direction of that boat, and now the speed, they're losing speed, but oh my God, that patch of wind is going to hit this boat first. Oh my God, they're going to catch up. You know, things change in a second. And that's what makes the data really interesting to me in sailing, is it literally is changing and impacting the game in real time.
Thanks, Christopher. This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk, A Cup of Cane with Scotch.
All right, thank you for that. 9:40 on a Tuesday, SailsportTalk.com. What other show brings you a weekly segment on the pleasures of sailing? And we bring in my co-host and sailing aficionado, the legend, Karen Lyle. How are you, Karen?
Oh, I'm doing great, Rick. Here we are.
Now, you had an idea today. You said you wanted to ask me about my sailing experiences, so the show is yours. You have the floor.
You know, Rick, I have had some fans, some sailing fans, asking me about you. And I thought, you get to interview everyone, and you've been doing it for, I don't know, how many years, Rick?
I've been in broadcasting since 89.
Okay. So what is it that got you into broadcasting? I mean, the pivotal thing that just made you say, I want to do this.
Well, I was a history major in college, and then I realized in my junior year that I was going to be a history teacher at 22, or at least getting a master's. And then I realized I had no desire to go to college after getting my bachelor's degree. And my dad actually suggested, you know, what about, because I was always a writer, and I wrote for the school newspaper, and I was a sports writer, and I always thought I was a pretty good writer. And so then we had a broadcasting truck that was donated, and so I started getting into broadcasting, and I switched majors, and so I started getting into broadcasting. I thought it seemed more exciting than being a history teacher in my 20s.
Well, it is exciting, and I love watching you do what you do, actually listening, because I don't you know, I only get to see you when I see you in person. You know, when you were rising in your career, what were some of the events that happened in sequence that just kind of, you know, created that that synergy, that energy that really, really made you shine?
Well, that's an interesting question. Well put. I'm just a shiner, like a black guy. No. What's funny is that, you know, nowadays there are so many different ways to get into broadcasting, and you can broadcast yourself, you know, things like YouTube and all that. But there was no internet. There were no cell phones. I know it sounds like, you know, Texas was the largest of our 48 states. But, you know, if you wanted to work in TV, you had to work for free. And most places didn't want someone that already had a college degree. They wanted college students. So my old teacher, Jim Freesia, said, I know a lady who has a production company in San Francisco called Independent Television News. I applied to be an intern there, and they said, we only have one per year, and we just hired one. So I put on a suit. I took Bart to San Francisco, and I put up a resume. And my resume basically said, you know, most inspirational player on the football team, whatever, not impressive. And I said, I know you, I went in person and I said, I know you said you have two, you can't have two interns, but here's my resume. And I got home and they called and said, well, we think what you did was really cool. So we will have two interns. And then that led into doing a lot of satellite press tours, video news releases. I got to go to Hugh Hefner's wedding at the Playboy Mansion, July 1st, 89, which is a story in and of itself. And not to make this story go on forever and ever, but we started a television studio for a new regional sports network called Sports Channel. And they immediately said, would you like to do it? You're kind of a sports guy. So they hired me to be a tape operator. And even before that, I was doing some sports byline TV. And you'll like this, Karen, as I was doing the tape and Chiron, or character generator, for that TV show in 1989, one of our interns was a guy named Darren Peck.
Now, was that the same Darren Peck that's now the president of Sports Byline?
Yes, not the weather guy at KCBS.
Right. Oh, my goodness, that's kick. Now, you said tape and character generator. Was that the toaster and the one-inch reel-to-reel tape?
Well, the toaster wasn't invented yet, but yes, I did use one-inch reels, and I would thread them through, and they were three-hour reels. And we did A's and Giants. We didn't have Warriors yet. They were on the Pacific Sports Network, and the Sharks didn't exist back then. But, yes, I did use one-inch reels. They were very, very heavy.
Yes, I remember. Actually, I started back in 1987, and I was using those one-inch reels for the first classical music video that I did for Arts and Entertainment Network. Anyway, but I wasn't the one operating the tape. I was the one who was producing the show. Mm-hmm. So now back to you, though. I want to know where you went in the world as a broadcaster that just stands out in your mind as this was a cool trip.
Well, one thing that and this is the thing, was that when I worked in TV for 10 years, I was a technical director in sports television, which was nights and weekends. And people asked me if I ever had a desire to be on the air, and I said, not really. And if you did, you had to have the ambition to go to all these different little markets. And you'd start off in Yuma, Arizona, and then you'd get West Palm Beach, and then you get a big break in Peoria. And then after 15 years, maybe you could get Sacramento. And I didn't want to do that. But anyway, once I did get into broadcasting, it's funny because I've been to Super Bowls and World Cups and World Series and NBA Finals and Stanley Cup Finals. But I would say the coolest thing I got to do, I just got to do in October. And I'm a huge lifelong Tottenham Hotspur fan. And the Raiders were playing the Bears at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in London. This last season of Oakland Raider football, I was the pre- and post-game host with Jim Cozumar, my co-host. So as a lifelong, you know, it was cool to do the A's for 8 years because that's my team, to be the guy that people call after the game. But to be the Raider guy and to do my pre- and post-game show from London, from that stadium, that I don't think anything is going to beat that.
That was a thrill. I remember we waved over the Atlantic. I think I was you were coming back as I was going to Europe or something.
I was in coach sitting in an aisle seat and you were on your private jet and we waved at each other.
Yeah, I wish. I wish it was the private jet. You know, this last year, you know, you've gotten acquainted with sailors and sail sport and cruisers and all kinds of things that you didn't know about sailing. What is it that stands out in your mind of all the interviews you've had, or what have you learned about sailing that kind of changes a preconceived idea you had?
Well, as two different questions there. I'll just say changing a preconceived notion is that I thought everyone who sailed was rich and out of touch and was Larry Ellison or Ted Turner. That's what I kind of thought that most sailors were, which I know isn't fair, but it's just you kind of think only rich people can do it. But the people who really stand out to me, I mean, Sir Robin Knox Johnson, we had him on twice. That guy is a man's man, just brave beyond words to go around the world by himself. But the bravest person, and you know, I rarely ask for a picture, and then you might remember I wanted to get a picture with this guy. It was the blind sailor. Because I don't know how people ride BART blind. That blows my mind. So how you can be a blind sailor, that one really stuck with me, Karen.
Well, actually, I just communicated with Walt. He lives in San Francisco. And so during COVID-19, I checked in with him to see how he's doing. And he's cool. He's chilling, just like the rest of us. And so I do remember you having that picture. And he is an inspiration, I think, because not only is he a world champion sailor, but, you know, he's doing it blind. And that's something we don't understand if we have sight.
No doubt.
You know, what is one of your favorite fan experiences?
Favorite what experiences?
Fan experiences. Experiences with sports fans.
As I said, I've been very privileged and blessed. Two of them really stick out. Number one was going to Super Bowl 11 with my little brother. Super Bowl 15. My dad took my older brother to Super Bowl 11. The Raiders beat the Vikings, and he felt bad because he had two other sons. And he said, if the Raiders go back, I promise that I'll take you guys. He kept his promise. We flew to New Orleans. The Super Bowl is always my age. So Super Bowl 15, I was 15, and the Raiders won that game. And that will always be number one. But working the World Cup at Stanford and having tickets to all the games, those are probably the best 2-3 weeks of my life. But the other thing I would say after the Super Bowl, and this was a loss, was the USA versus Czech Republic in Gelsenkirchen at the World Cup in Germany in 2006 to sing the national anthem with the USA fans in Germany at the World Cup. I had relatives there. That was just – I was titillated beyond belief for that one.
Is that where you got the name for the show, or was it already named?
I got the name for the show. I remember watching Univision, and they had a thing called Deportes Titulares, which I thought meant titillating sports. And so I thought I was stealing it from it, and then I found out that Deportes Titulares does not mean titillating sports. But when this show started on Sirius, I thought it was, you know, just going to be a month or two, maybe a year tops. So all I did was comedy bits. And then I got legit, and now I have to actually talk real sports, and it sucked all the fun out of it, Karen.
You're legit. Oh, okay. I forgot that part. Yeah. Are we legit? Are people actually listening to us? You know, sometimes it's hard to know when you're all by yourself.
Oh,
here, huh?
They are.
Oh, okay. That's a good thing to know. You know, has there ever a time that you wanted to just throw in the towel and quit broadcasting?
There was a time when
I was
working.
Or did it always just grab you?
Pardon?
Or did it always just grab you and you've never wanted to quit once you started?
I'd quit it tomorrow if you have something better. No. I remember there was a time when I was first working in television, like my first year, and there was an opportunity to teach at a grammar school because I was a substitute teacher in the Oakland Diocese part-time, and there was a full-time teaching position, and I thought it sounded kind of fun, and luckily my dad, who's a lot smarter than me, said, you don't want to do that. Come on, you're just getting started in broadcasting. But Other than that, no, because, you know, when I was in college to get money to go to Europe in the summer, I worked at a shoe store at the El Cerrito Plaza, McPhee's Junior Bootery. I worked at a shoe store at the Hilltop Mall. I realized I was a clerk at the world headquarters of Bank of America one time for a summer. I realized that putting on a suit and then working at a cubicle was something that I never, ever wanted to do.
Did you ever go to another country besides London when you were sportscasting?
Yeah, I went all over the continent. In fact, the World Cup in 06, I remember doing reports back to my show with I had Dennis King filling in for me at the time and Josh Shear. But we have time for one more quickie. You got one?
Yeah. Are you in the studio now? Because I'm still in my house, and you mentioned you were going across the bridge. So I was wondering if you're back in the studio.
Oh no, I ain't going across no bridge. I'm in my house, girl.
Yeah, me too. Here we are. You know, I'm actually really grateful for this time to be able to be doing the show during COVID-19. It helps give some sense of normalcy to this crazy world. How about you?
Yes. Yeah, no, and I appreciate you. I appreciate the interest in me. I know people didn't learn anything about sailing right now, but you know what? Sometimes you need human interest stories, right?
You are the color today.
All right. Karen, thanks for your time. SailSportTalk.com, everybody. Check it out. Karen, we'll check you out next week. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll come on back on Sports Byline.